is a total lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Done by Law, brought to you by the Federation of Community Legal Centres.
Welcome to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM. And also welcome to those listening via various podcast platforms or via streaming on 3cr.org.au. Tonight, you're with Bonnie and Jimmy. Hello, Jimmy.
Hello, Bonnie. Good to be back.
And it's just after 6pm on Tuesday on the 3rd of February 2026. As always, we would like to start tonight's show by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation as the original and rightful custodians of the land that 3CR broadcasts from. We also acknowledge the custodians from where our guest is dialing in from tonight, Wadjuk Budja in the Noongar Nation, and that our discussion today will cover topics impacting First Nations people throughout Australia. This episode was recorded in the weeks following 2026 Invasion Day, a day of mourning for Australia's First Peoples. We pay our deepest respects to elders past, present, and those emerging, and acknowledge these lands were stolen, never ceded, always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
And tonight we are joined by a very special guest returning to the show after a couple of years off. It's Eric Haywood, a Wadjuri and Kanyang Noongar historian at the University of Western Australia and truth teller about Western Australia's black colonial history. Eric was the first Noongar to complete a UWA law degree in 1991 and was awarded the WA NAIDOC Aboriginal Student of the Year. After working as a WA and federal public servant, Eric graduated from Edith Cowan University to work as a primary school teacher in difficult-to-staff schools throughout regional Western Australia from 2003 all the way up until 2018. Eric has since re-entered the legal profession as a solicitor in a variety of roles. His highlights including delivering community legal education to school-age students in the Southwest using Legal Aid's Are You Legal program. Eric is a father of six children and two grandchildren with Noongar family connections to the South Coast and Great Southern Forest in Western Australia. He is recognised as an elder by the South West Aboriginal Land and Sea Council. Eric previously came on Done by Law to unpack his submission to the Senate Standing Committee on Australia's Youth Justice and Incarceration System, an ongoing inquiry, which was due for final report in February of last year. We hope to hear a little bit more about that in tonight's show. We're lucky enough to have Eric back on the show tonight to discuss reflections on Invasion Day and whether recent processes in Victoria of truth-telling and treaty are translatable to the western end of the continent. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
And listeners, for having me.
So, Eric, it's really great to have you on the show today, and we've just had Invasion Day come and go a couple of weeks back. We would love to know, what are your reflections on the day and its meaning to you as a Noongar man?
So as a Noongar man, Invasion Day represents the expansion of the British Empire in the late 18th and early 19th centuries of the richest nation on earth, England or Britain. And in context, in 1788, Britain was the dominant capitalist empire that was made wealthy by stealing First Nations territories, enslaving and decimating First Nations peoples, not only just across Australia, but North America, Africa, Asia, the Pacific and Central America. It was a global enterprise.
And I think talking about that global enterprise and then the kind of more specific reflections on Australia's colonial history, I think, you know, you and I talked about the nullity that is the 26th of January 1788. Western Australia wasn't settled, as I understand it, until 1826 in what's now known as Albany, and not formally colonised until 1829 in Boorloo or Perth. Why is that important to you in the context of Invasion Day and the kind of broader Change the Date campaign?
Well, I guess for us on the West Coast, January 26, 1788 is when English Captain Arthur Phillip landed on Sydney Cove to establish New South Wales. But it's not when Australia was first discovered by English Captain Cook on the East Coast, because it was actually late in the 1700s when the West Coast was discovered by an English buccaneer by the name of William Dampier. And I guess for people that are from outside of New South Wales, there are various colonies in Australia that all had their own dates for establishments of their former British colonies. But if we go back even further for context, going back 500 years, the Spanish, Dutch and French all documented a great southern land, giving it various names from the 16th century, such the Dutch called it New Holland, which remained so until the 19th century. I support Change the Date to give meaning to the whole of the Commonwealth of Australia, not just symbolic representation of the former colony of New South Wales.
Yeah, it's really interesting that that history, and I guess a lot of people maybe outside of New South Wales wouldn't be so aware at how it is different for the different states and territories. So in terms of the Change the Date campaign and your views on this, Eric, I've seen that the Clothing the Gaps company are calling for an Australian long weekend, a public holiday on the second last Monday in January each year, which would effectively create a three-day national event. What are your thoughts on that proposal, Eric?
Oh, yeah. We need a truly national day that represents when the colonies join together to recognise our young nation. Australians love Monday long weekends, and so do I. I fully support a long weekend to celebrate our nation, which includes Australia's First Nations peoples and all of our immigrants of the past 200 years, more than 200 years, not just British convicts and British colonisers, but the waves of people that have arrived on our shores after escaping both of the world wars, post-Vietnam and Afghanistan, right up to the present day. We've all made our contributions to making this a prosperous country.
Yeah, and I think what you've kind of distilled there a lot of, you know, the beauty of the diversity of our nation's history. You know, it's I think the idea, what was appealing to me about that kind of three-day national event is, you know, there's a day for reflection on the horrors of our colonial history, and there's a day for celebration of what our society does provide to us, and there's a day to kind of reflect on other parts that might be important to us, whether we're recent migrants with cultures that we can express in this country, or and I think, you know, there is a lot of love for Australia outside of the colonial history that all people can celebrate, but there's also a lot to reflect on as well. Do you have any kind of, you know, we talked about the day the colonies came together, but there's a lot of kind of different ideas. Do you have any particular date or day that you'd prefer, or that you have a view on in terms of that, or is that not what the important thing is here?
Well, yes, Jimmy, I do. I guess not many people know, and particularly new waves of immigrants, is that we had a Federation Day on the 1st of January 1900 when all our colonies came together to make the Commonwealth of Australia, but we already have a New Year's Day holiday on that date. I think we should have the Australia Day public holiday, keep it in summer, call it Federation Day to symbolise the joining of all the Australian colonies and celebrate a long weekend on the first Monday in February.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I always think about the January the 1st aspect as being a kind of roadblock to it, because at the end of the day, a big motivation for public holidays is those long weekends where we can kick back and enjoy what this continent gives to us, which is some good sunshine, which is why I think the summer suggestion is really good as well.
Yeah, definitely. And having something that's more inclusive, it's so important. I guess, are there any other reflections or thoughts that you have, Eric, that you wanted to share about Invasion Day?
I think we still keep the Australian citizenship ceremonies on that long weekend. Mm. You know, we can have the fireworks, the family gatherings. I still like the idea of the one-day cricket international, the sausage sizzles. It should still be a celebration, but not focusing on the British colonisers, but all the contributions made of the waves of people that have come, and putting First Nations people at the front and centre of this. It's a celebration for all of us.
Yeah, fantastic. Eric, I wanted to move on to they're heavily related bicentenary. That's depending on whether we're talking about settlement or colonising, occurring in 1826 or 1829, is around the corner or on our doorstep. I'm a sand groper from 10 years ago, and I'm constantly aware how little these bloody East Coasters know about what goes on out west. And I don't think a lot of people are aware that the, you know, what we've talked about, how long it took for the Brits to go out west. What are some of the key aspects? I know you've done a lot of research as a historian into kind of pre-colonial and colonial history in WA. What are some of the key aspects of Western Australia's pre-colonial and colonial history that you think are most slept on by the broader public? And what aspects of colonial violence do you think East Coasters may be less or not at all aware of?
Look, I'll try to keep it in a snapshot because I'm a historian and historians like to go on and on.
Hey, we got you on here to talk, Eric, so talk away.
Here we go. So in 1616, the Dutch were the first Europeans to make it to the West Coast as members of the Dutch East India Company, and they called it the Great Southland. There was a gruesome story in 1629 about a mutiny led by Geronimus Cornelius of the Batavia shipwreck and the slaughter of 125 marooned Dutch civilians in our northwest. This is still one of, if not the worst massacres in Australian history. In the late 1700s, the French were the first to sail the Swan River, naming Harrison Island near a causeway to the east of the city. About 1800, after the French Anglo War ended, the French sent out scientific expeditions, including exploring the southern coast of Australia. In Western Australia, French commander Bourdon named many geographical features from his exploration, including the town of Esperance and the Recherche Archipelago on the south coast, around the southwest capes, naming Cape Naturalist, Lachenal Estuary, Geograph Bay, and the Bass River. So there's a lot of French influence in our geography. My colleague Mary Blythe has researched a story about a French sailor who was abandoned near Busselton. He lived with and was kept alive by the Wadandi Noongar people until he was rescued 2 years later. Now, the New South Wales colony caught wind of the French sniffing around the southwest coast and sent Captain George Vancouver to identify a garrison outpost to deter French ambitions. That is how King Georgetown was established as the first British military outpost in Western Australia in 1826, 3 years before the Swan River colony.
Wow, yeah. There's a lot to unpack there. None of which we have time for in tonight's episode because we want to get on to you about other things. But can I just do a shout out to the Ship of Batavia? That is something I never expected to talk about on Done by Law and is a fascinating piece of pre-colonial history.
Itself.
Yeah, it's just, we'll see if I can turn this into a history podcast one day and we'll get you back on the show just for that. But look, we are at the halfway point of our show. So we'll come back in the second half of the program to talk about how these truths can be brought into Australia's broader consciousness. But halftime here at Done by Law, stay tuned. We'll take a quick break with a community service announcement.
We jailed black males in Australia nationally at a rate five times greater than apartheid South Africa jailed black males in 1993. The suicide and self-harm rates are the highest in the world, and the life expectancy gap is the biggest in the first world. You know, Australians don't like hearing the truth about how bad things are, but the more we resolve from it, the longer this is going to continue.
Black fella, white fella, it doesn't matter what you colour.
Mainstream media is not interested in this stuff. It doesn't find space to talk truthfully and deeply about issues that affect all Australians. The only place predominantly you will find that with any real depth is on community radio, and 3CR has been one of the great leaders in that. So if people are wondering where they should spend their hard-earned cash, I would suggest 3CR is a bloody good place to start.
What your name is, we got to have lots of changes, we need more brothers.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to Done by Law on 3CR Community Radio with Jimmy and Bonnie. We're speaking with Eric Haywood, discussing all things Invasion Day and how we can and should be reflecting on the nation's and Western Australia's history.
Thanks, Jimmy. So, Eric, in the first half of the program, we touched on the colonial violence in Western Australia, and there were so many interesting and important stories that you shared that unfortunately we don't have time to go into. But I think it's really important for this next question around looking forward for WA and processes that need to happen to address this history. Eric, I know you're an advocate for truth-telling in Western Australia, something that Victoria has and continues to undergo. What do you think is needed for adequate truth-telling, and what specifically are you and your community calling for in Western Australia?
What we know is that one size does not fit all. Australians are aware of that, so what might have worked one state may not necessarily work the other. But what we cannot do is make the mistake of the recent referendum and fail to consult with local communities about what truth-telling really means. We need a public education campaign like we have for any major political change, and that means acknowledging our history, good and bad, warts and all. Violence was a dominant feature of colonial Australia and used to dispossess and disperse First Nations peoples from their territories occupied for tens of thousands of years. We must begin with a grassroots community consultation, not just in Perth, Western Australia, but throughout regional Western Australia, which looks like town hall meetings after work, community library morning teas, and school lunch saucy sizzles, talking about local history and including local Indigenous people sharing their oral histories. Step two could be a truth-telling commission with hearings in every region of the state for Indigenous peoples to tell their ancestors' stories and the truth about colonial violence suffered at the hands of British troopers, officials, settlers, pastoralists and police. And finally, we need bipartisan support from both major parties and a commitment to memorialise places of colonial violence where both Indigenous and non-Indigenous lives were lost.
Mm. Yeah. I think you're probably going to give me a similar answer when I ask you about treaty now, because, you know, Victorians have a habit of thinking, if it's working well here, let's roll it out across the country. Everyone should do what we're doing. But because treaty's now passed in Victoria, and, you know, I think more from a position of hopefulness than elitism is my hope. There is kind of curiosity as to whether this model is translatable to other jurisdictions. It's been a huge moment of celebration in Victoria, an opportunity to reset the relationship. But the Noongar community looking to do the same? Is the Victoria model translated to Western Australia, both Noongar country and other countries? Or are there some important differences that people should be aware of when kind of having that dialogue?
Look, I had a quick look at the processes that led up to the Truth-Telling Commission and the Treaty and the People's Assembly. These are stages that are critically important, and it takes years. And I guess if I looked at my own state, which is very conservative, we had one of the lowest yes votes in the recent referendum. Mm. The West Australian Labor Party does not have the heart, courage or conviction to follow Victoria's lead. And I guess all I can say is that we have a premier in Roger Cook who has an Aboriginal wife, and I keep thinking to myself, what will the legacy be for someone like him for future reconciliation between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people in Western Australia when he leaves office?
Yeah. I know it's been a vexed couple of years for Roger Cook and the WA Labor government, and once again, it's a whole... WA Labor is a whole different beast to Victorian Labor. Yeah. They are tethered to resources, and resources are often tethered to destructions of First Nations rights. So,
mining and profits.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What do you think? Where do you see as an avenue for change there, or where do you think the inroad is for the WA Labor government? Is there one, or is it just is it kind of much more aspirational, these talks of truth-telling and treaty? Do you think there is progress that can be made in the next couple of years?
There is an opportunity, and I'm not sure if East Coast listeners would know this, but the balance of power in the upper house is actually held by the Greens Party.
Mm.
Now, the Greens managed to get 4 or 5 members in the Legislative Council, which was a record, and they have the balance of power. If the Labor government wanted to make any sort of major social change, that, and I know that the Greens are on board with truth-telling, they can do it. It's a matter of whether they had the willpower and the moral fortitude to do it, and sadly, I think they're a long way from that.
Yeah, it's a really difficult time, I think, looking over at WA. And I think coming back to what you said earlier, Eric, about the process going forward and focusing first on that grassroots stage and that public education piece is so important as we hopefully get some movement up or above. But I now wanted to move to a different topic, which I know is quite important for the Greens Party. It's also been a bit of a focus recently with the recent UN periodic review of Australia. It was a topic that was a big focus for many other countries looking in terms of our human rights record here. It's also a topic that you discussed last time you're on the show with Jimmy, and we're talking about youth incarceration and the campaign to lower the age of criminal responsibility. Whether it's lowering it to, raising the age of criminal responsibility.
I think last time we were talking about lowering the age, some jurisdictions were lowering the age of responsibility, yeah. And then some were raising it from 10 to 12 when they'd previously promised 14. It was a shambles of jurisdictions doing different things, but no one doing the right thing.
It's so, a little bit all over the shop.
Yeah, it was.
So, Eric, sorry to interrupt. It'd be really great to get an update, I guess, from you in terms of that campaign, looking back to what was happening when you were last on the show. Can you give us a bit of an update as to where things are at now?
There is an organisation dedicated to raising the age called Raising the Age. Now, I guess since we last spoke 2 years ago, incarceration rates for Indigenous children across Australia have increased. We've had deaths in custody in Western Australia of youth. Mm. And I keep thinking to myself, this is almost a foreseeing what's going to happen in the future. If we keep increasing the number of kids in juvenile institutions, and I guess really the only person that has any authority in this is the Federal Attorney General, because they are the ones that fund the Australian state jurisdictions and the territories. And I believe it's at the behest of the Federal Attorney General to do something about this. What they need to be doing is saying to the state and territory jurisdictions, you must comply with our international treaty obligations and threaten to withdraw federal youth corrections funding if they do not comply. Mm. Raise the age to 14 years, and the first place to start is the Northern Territory, and then you can follow that up by the Australian Capital Territory.
Mm. And so many times since our last conversation, Eric, I just keep having flashbacks to when I was 10, and my Lord, the idea of that kid having any sorts of responsibility, let alone being able to manage an incarceration environment, has sent regular shivers down my spine since November 2024. So, it's not a good thing to think about. And of course, the recent deaths in custody, including for youth in WA's youth incarceration systems, is just the most...
That's a canary in the coal mine, isn't it? I mean, that's saying that the system is broken and building more prisons for youth and putting more of them in without any focus on rehabilitation or diversion, stopping them going in there. It's blows my mind.
Yeah, canary in the coal mine in one sense, and another it's stuffing canaries into a coal mine and then it collapses, yes. You know?
And then locking up for 11 hours a day and thinking that they're going to be all right with that.
Yeah. Well, Eric, you're a fascinating man, and you've got a lot of things to talk about, but we are reaching the end of tonight's show, but I'm going to have to find a regular spot or something for you on this show because...
I've got more to talk about.
Yeah, you've got plenty more to talk about. And you've got your own website now as well. How can people keep in touch with your work and your writings?
I do. Look, I have a website, Noongar Boodja Justice. It's about colonial justice, but it also has a reference to the National Massacres Project map. Mm. And that's something that you can check out on the website. On the East Coast and the West Coast, all around Australia, there's a map showing where colonial massacres were. And I guess I'm also coming to my final year of my PhD research in Swan River colonial history and colonial justice. So I have a research repository at the University of Western Australia. And I guess there's a lot more to find out, a lot more to share, and a lot more for us to learn about the history of this country.
Fantastic. Well, maybe when the PhD is done, maybe for something else. But we'd love to have you back on the show anytime, Eric.
That's good.
We'll make sure to include the link in the bio of the episode. And thank you so much again for joining the show, Eric. We really appreciate you coming back on.
No worries. Budawang, Mob.
Yeah, Budawang. You have been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, streamed at 3cr.org.au and available on various podcast platforms. Done by Law will be back again next Tuesday at 6 PM as always. Stay tuned for the voices of West Papua after this song. It is the Pigram Brothers Going Back Home, my first ever concert. Mum took me there as about a 6-month-old and I slept through the whole thing. So time to have another listen. Thanks so much, Bonnie, for joining the show tonight as
well.
Thanks,
Jimmy.
See you next time.